Good afternoon. Thanks for your patience. I was delaying for a bit to give those of you who are interested some time to see the press briefing that was just happening from our colleagues in Geneva with Lakhdar Brahimi. The Joint Special Representative for Syria, Lakhdar Brahimi, held separate meetings today, first with the Syrian Arab Republic delegation and then with the Syrian opposition delegation at the Palais des Nations in Geneva. Mr. Brahimi then spoke to reporters in a briefing that's happening on webcast right now, and he said that the parties have agreed to meet again tomorrow. He said he never expected the process to be easy, but added that the discussions he has had with the parties have been encouraging. Mr. Brahimi said that the Geneva communique is the basis of the discussions taking place, and the parties understand that. I have the following statement attributable to the spokesperson for the Secretary General on Egypt. The Secretary General condemns today's terrorist attacks in Greater Cairo, which reportedly killed at least 6 people and resulted in a large number of casualties. No cause can justify such acts of terrorism. He conveys his condolences to the families of the victims, as well as to the government and people of Egypt, and calls for the perpetrators to be brought to justice. In a statement we issued yesterday evening, the Secretary General encouraged the Egyptian people to renew their commitment to peaceful dialogue and nonviolence. He reiterated the commitment of the United Nations to support Egypt in building the future for all Egyptians with dignity, freedom, responsible governance, and development that inspired the uprising of 2011. Revolutions and political transitions are complex phenomena that can take years to play out. A peaceful and democratic Egypt is what the people of Egypt deserve and is critical for the region and beyond, and the full statement is online. The Secretary General is on his way back to New York from Davos, where he attended a number of events related to climate change and agriculture. In his speech to a major session at the World Economic Forum, the Secretary General said that the world faced an existential threat, but added that addressing climate change was also a great opportunity to support global efforts on sustainable development. The Secretary General said that this was why he would host a climate summit in New York in September that would have 2 goals: to encourage ambitious action to reduce emissions and build resilience, and to mobilize political will for a meaningful global legal climate agreement by 2015. He said the next 2 years would be critical. The Secretary General also spoke at a session on green investment, saying that clean energy, sustainable production and consumption, and environmentally sound transport and urban planning are good for the planet, good for people, and good for business. They can create jobs, new markets, and boost economies. Last night, at a World Food Program event in Davos, the Secretary General invited leaders to join him in signing the Zero Hunger Declaration. Those who signed the declaration are committing themselves to take action to eliminate hunger within our lifetime through sustainable, climate-smart food systems. And the Secretary General's remarks are available online. Like I said, he's returning to New York later today. And then on Sunday, the 26th of January, the Secretary General will depart New York for Havana, Cuba, where he'll participate in the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, or CELAC, summit. In Cuba, the Secretary General will hold bilateral meetings with a wide range of government officials and regional leaders. On Wednesday, the 29th of January, the Secretary General will travel to Germany. In Berlin, he will meet with senior government officials, including Federal President Dr. Joachim Gauck, Federal Chancellor Angela Merkel, and Federal Minister for Foreign Affairs Frank-Walter Steinmeier, among others. While in Berlin, the Secretary General will also hold the inaugural meeting of a scientific advisory board, which he set up last year. The board, which comprises 26 eminent scientists, aims to ensure that rigorous science is reflected in high-level policy discussions within the UN system. The Secretary General will travel to Bonn on Friday, the 31st of January, and meet with UN staff members as well as local authorities. The last leg of his trip will be Munich, where the Secretary General will attend the 50th Munich Security Conference. He will hold talks in the margins of the conference with a number of officials in attendance. And the Secretary General will return to New York on Saturday, the 1st of February. As you will have seen in a statement issued last night, the Secretary General welcomes the agreement on cessation of hostilities signed yesterday in Addis Ababa by the government of the Republic of South Sudan and the Sudan People's Liberation Movement Army in opposition. He calls on the parties to immediately implement this agreement. The Secretary General congratulates the Intergovernmental Authority on Development on the successful mediation of this agreement and underscores the necessity to continue without delay a national political dialogue to reach a comprehensive peace agreement with the participation of all South Sudanese political and civil society representatives, including the Sudan People's Liberation Movement detainees. The United Nations stands with the people of South Sudan and will continue to do everything within its means to protect civilians at risk and provide the necessary humanitarian assistance. The full statement is available online and in our office. Also welcoming the agreement is the Secretary General's Special Representative, Hilda Johnson. She calls on all the parties to start an inclusive and comprehensive political dialogue to resolve the underlying causes of the conflict, work towards national reconciliation, and build effective state institutions so the people of South Sudan enjoyed the peace they so much deserved. And you will also have seen that the Security Council issued a press statement last night on this agreement, and that's also available. The UN mission in South Sudan has conducted 205 military and 37 police patrols in various parts of the country, including in central Equatoria, Jonglei, Unity, and Upper Nile states. In Bor, in Jonglei state, the mission is protecting some 10,300 civilians. In Juba, 1,800 troops and police are currently protecting approximately 35,000 civilians at two bases. Overall, the mission continues to protect 76,000 civilians at eight bases across the country. And the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says that the humanitarian community also welcomes yesterday's agreement. It hopes that the agreement will lead to an environment where people feel safe to return to their homes and continue with their daily lives. In the wake of the signing of the agreement in South Sudan, the World Food Program says that it is poised to seize any window of opportunity to deliver food to areas that have been difficult to reach. The World Food Program says that humanitarian access and the looting of food stocks remain major concerns. Its warehouses in Malakal have been almost entirely emptied by repeated looting incidents, and WFP is urgently working to move more food into the town to help the tens of thousands of people uprooted by the clashes. For its part, the UN Refugee Agency and its partners are starting a mass measles immunization campaign in northern Uganda to prevent the spread of measles among South Sudanese refugees. The United Nations humanitarian coordinator in the Central African Republic says that the country continues to face a crisis of major proportions, with nearly 1 million people, or one-fifth of the population, displaced, and 2.6 million people in need of immediate assistance. Abdou Dieng says that the humanitarian community remains committed to continue providing aid to those affected by the crisis. The main focus of the strategy is to save lives and alleviate people's suffering. Mr. Dieng noted that security concerns, including lootings and killings, are hampering the delivery of assistance. And the UN Refugee Agency reports that during the past week, more than 65,000 people have fled the conflict in the cities of Fallujah and Ramadi in central Iraq's Anbar province. Since fighting broke out at the end of last year, more than 140,000 people have been made homeless by fighting, according to Iraq's Ministry of Displacement and Migration. This is the largest displacement Iraq has witnessed since the sectarian violence of 2006 to 2008. The United Nations in Iraq has asked the Iraqi government to help allow the opening of a humanitarian corridor to reach displaced and stranded families in Anbar province. In recent weeks, several bridges leading into the conflict area and communities hosting displaced people have been destroyed, making access difficult. It's impossible right now to reach the area from Baghdad, and relief agencies are using roads coming from northern Iraq. And last, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency addressed the organization's board of governors today. Director General Yuki Amano called the agreement reached last November on Iran's nuclear program an important and encouraging development after several years of little or no progress. He voiced hope that all of the work undertaken by the agency will provide an important contribution to advancing the resolution of the Iran nuclear issue and will lead to further positive developments. That's it for me. Any questions? Yes. Yes, please.
Thank you, Haram. My question is about Myanmar. So does the United Nations have any response to the recent the reaction from the Myanmar government on which strongly objected the UN claim of the 40 killing of the conflict between the ethnic groups, the religious groups? And do you have any concern about the response from the Myanmar government shows the Myanmar's government and the international community are going back to the wrong direction?
Well, I don't have anything specific to say about the reaction by the Myanmar government. From our part, the United Nations has received information pertaining to alleged serious violent incidents that it may have taken place in Du Chi Yartan village in Mongdao earlier this month. We understand that the situation remains tense and efforts are underway to obtain further details. The special advisor, Vijay Nambiar, presently in Myanmar, has had meetings with government leaders during which he expressed the concern of the United Nations and the need to address civilian protection concerns squarely. the United Nations renews its call for calm and urges the authorities to protect human rights and civilian populations at risk, while also working actively to reduce communal tensions. The United Nations also stresses the importance of addressing the underlying causes of these tensions and taking preventive measures to avoid any further loss of life. The United Nations has urged the authorities to investigate these allegations in a timely and transparent manner. And we also refer you to recent statements by the Emergency Relief Coordinator, Valerie Amos, and by Navi Pillay, the High Commissioner for Human Rights. Yes?
Just another Myanmar question. There's the census, and it seems coming up, and it seems that the UN system is involved in funding and maybe even participating in it. And both Kachin groups and Rohingya groups have expressed a lot of concerns that, one, there's no box in the census thus far to check Rohingya, meaning implying that they're not citizens, and also the Kachin have other complaints. And I wanted to know, is the UN aware of these? What steps are they taking, and will they fund a census that many groups think may make things worse rather than better?
Well, we'll look into what we're doing on that question. We'll need some details about that. Of course, you've seen what our concerns are about the treatment of the Rohingya and of the Kachin, and those continue to apply. Yes, Rhonda.
Thank you. I wondered if the Secretary General has any response or comments to the proposals made by the DPRK on January 16th, the ROK. This proposal that's been made, does the Secretary General have any response to that?
You mean on the family reunion?
No, this is on the request that there be an effort to calm tensions and not have anything that brings those tensions up further.
Well, the Secretary General's views in favor of having the tensions calmed throughout the Korean Peninsula are well known, and so that's consistent. The idea of calming tensions is consistent with what he's been advocating for some time.
But there's a specific proposal that's been made, and there's been some answer.
I wouldn't have any reaction to
okay.
that.
Okay, and then.
Actually, can we go to someone else first? Yes.
Yeah, it's about Geneva II. We know that Iran has not been invited, but will actually, during the process, Iran have some kind of backseat during the discussion? Do you have any information about that?
I don't have any information on this. We've consistently said that we hope that Iran can play a positive and constructive role. At this stage, as you're aware, the talks are between the two delegations, the delegation from the government of the Syrian Arab Republic and the opposition delegation. And so it's those two parties and Lakhdar Brahimi, the joint special representative, who are in discussions. If we'll see whether there's any other involvement by other member states down the line, but that's where we stand for now. Yes.
All right. Yeah, my second question is about the letters that the Syrian government has sent to the UN, and I'm wondering if the Secretary General has been briefed on those letters. There's over 200 that are supposedly about the nature of the terrorism that's been attacking in Syria, and so is there any process, is there any response of the Secretary General to those letters?
Whenever we get letters, those are evaluated by the departments that would be interested in them, and that's been the case with these letters, and we respond as appropriate. Yes, Pam.
Thank you, Brian. Can you just flesh out the Cuba meeting of the Secretary General? He arrives on Sunday, stays through Monday, and is there anything, any meetings scheduled other than the CELAC meetings?
He will have some other meetings and visits while he is in Havana, and we'll give you the details of those as they proceed. Some of the meetings he will have while he's traveling will be with the leaders of the CELAC, of the Latin American coalition that will be present for those talks. So we'll meet with them, with Cuban officials, and also he'll see some projects on the ground. We'll hold on a sec. He'll be there on basically on Monday and Tuesday, and then he'll travel on to Germany on Wednesday. Yes, Jonathan.
Do we have the names of which Cuban officials that he meeting, and also by chance is he meeting Fidel Castro?
I don't have any confirmation on that, and I don't have any names to give just yet. We'll provide details as we can once the trip is underway. Yes.
Sure. On South Sudan, I wanted to know, they're already, the Riek Machar side has said that they're still continuing attacks by the SPLA against them in Unity State and Jonglei State. And one, I wanted to know if the UN is aware of that, if they have any awareness of continued military action, and also if there's going to be any UN role in this monitoring and verification mechanism envisioned by the IGAD agreement.
Okay, well, on your first question about reports of fighting, yes, the UN mission in South Sudan says that sporadic fighting took place in parts of the country today. It's critical that both parties implement the cessation of hostilities agreement in full and immediately. The United Nations calls on all communities to cease hostilities and refrain from any act that could harm individuals and properties or lead to further displacement. And regarding the question on the monitoring mechanism, the establishment of a fully functioning ceasefire monitoring mechanism is essential for the implementation of the agreement. The United Nations stands ready to provide critical support to this process. The United Nations will continue to protect civilians at risk and calls on all parties to ensure the safety and security of UN personnel and facilities. Yes, Evelyn.
Sorry for the delay. On South Sudan, in any of these civil wars, there are going to be revenge killings and so forth, and I expect that the agreement will be breached quite often. And does the UN have the capacity to monitor any of this because so many troops have not arrived yet? And I wonder how you can get a handle on what's happening and who's violating what and what can be done to stop it, because I imagine every other day one side is going to accuse the other side of having violated. That usually happens in these kind of agreements signed on the top.
Yes, that's understood. And we, of course, are trying to get our reinforcements in as soon as we can get them. Beyond that, like I said, we're looking forward to the establishment of a fully functioning ceasefire monitoring mechanism, and that will be essential.
Do you have any idea do you have a timetable when other troops are arriving? Or?
Well, I believe I gave you some information a few days ago about how an advance team from the Nepalese had come in, right. and the rest of that contingent is expected to arrive in the coming days. So that's the first one, and as we get others, we'll let you know. Yes.
Also regarding South Sudan, you said that a ceasefire monitoring mechanism is essential. The UN is ready to help with that. But in the South Sudan case, it seems that there have been a lot of public criticism regarding the UN's role. So how would the UN be perceived as taking a very neutral role in something like a ceasefire monitoring? Is there a worry about that?
Well, I would just refer you to the statement made just within the past couple of hours by President Salva Kiir, which we're very appreciative of the work done by the UN mission in South Sudan. Yes.
Thanks. I've got a question about this WFP incident. And we've been getting statistics at the briefings for the past few weeks about the number of patrols happening every day across the country. But it seems like because there are 200,000, food for 200,000 people that was taken, that would be a priority mission to go and figure out what's happened to that and if it can be brought back into WFP control. Is there any plan to do that? And furthermore, in the WFP statement, they said they're trying to get more food back into that base, but obviously it's not a very secure facility. So are there plans to reinforce it or to protect it better than was done previously?
Well, we're trying to protect the food. Of course, what's essential is that the parties now abide by the terms of the ceasefire agreement and stop with all of the armed attacks as well as the looting of facilities. This has been a constant problem. And as for what the World Food Program is doing, of course, you can ask them about their projects, but they clearly feel that it's essential to keep providing food to the people in need. So we'll need to get food to Malakal.
But is there a plan to reinforce, to assist them in protecting the food? It seems like an unwise position to have the agencies so separate on a matter that is of such consequence to people there.
Well, the UN mission is working with the World Food Program to try and see that that food can be delivered safely. But, of course, part of the onus is on the parties themselves not to attack and loot our facilities. Hopefully, with this agreement in place, if the parties comply with it, it can now be safer for things that are central, such as humanitarian aid deliveries. Yes.
I wanted to know, it's said that Ivan Simonovic, assisted on human rights based here in New York, is going to meet with a Native American representative about the name of the Washington Redskins today. I wanted to know, is it true, and will we get a readout if it is true?
Well, first of all, we don't provide readouts of all meetings with all officials, normally just with the Secretary General, sometimes with some other key officials. I would doubt that there would be one on this. I don't have a confirmation that this meeting is taking place, but I can check.
Good.
Yes.
About the documents that have been sent, the letters that have been sent to the UN by Syrian government, where would they go, and is there some way to find out what's happened? Because there's over 200 dealing with terrorism. There's negotiations going on. What is there any process that those are going to be part of, or is it useless that they send those letters?
It's always useful to send letters. All letters sent by any member state are processed and worked on. Depending upon what the content of the letter is, different departments have input on what to do next, and so we respond over time with all of them. But they're all logged and responded to in whatever manner is felt appropriate by the responsible departments. Have a good weekend, everyone.